Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome everybody to the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now radio show. That's Stop Child Abuse Now, which is abbreviated SCAN, S-C-A-N. And this is SCAN number 3037. And like all our shows, it'll be archived on our website. So if you miss part of it, you can always go back and listen again. The website I'm talking about is the NASCA website. NASCA stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. NASCA is a nonprofit 501c3. And I'm going to read the mission statement of NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have a question and answer discussion show using an open mic forum. And you are invited to call in and join us tonight. The call-in number is 646-595-2111. Call in anytime during our show to become a participant in our conversation and to ask a question if you want to. So on our Survivor Professional Nights, we feature a co-host who will field topics brought to the episode by you, the listener. Tonight's special guest is Pastor Deborah Schleit, who grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill, and she is now a survivor professional. Living in Pensacola, Florida, she's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker, all in one. She volunteers with many community organizations. Pastor Deborah says she can, quote, minister by text, phone, Skype, in person, and however the Lord directs her, 24/7, unquote. She teaches that humans have three parts, being a spirit, soul, and the physical body, and believes that all three parts are important and that each area needs care. Okay, and with that, I will say hi, Pastor Deborah. I want to also say hi to our co-host, Darlene. She's here also. But I'm going to turn it over to you, Pastor Deborah, and tell us about your topic for tonight.
Hello, Miss Annie.
Hi.
Yes. Yeah, welcome. What I prayed about what I should talk about, and what came up was it came from a movie I was watching some time ago. It had to do with helping people. And this one person in it said that some people are blinded by the past, and therefore they cannot show a future to others. And sometimes when you've had some issues, you know, in your life, whatever they are, a lot of times we stay living in that, and we stay in that identity. And we stay there. And for a lot of victims of sexual abuse, human trafficking, whatever it is, they stay there. And they're not able to show, say, other people or even see it themselves that there could be something different for themselves or that there could be a different future for themselves other than what they've lived. And that's one of, when you're in the helping profession or you're an advocate for something or something, we'll say child abuse, you've got to be able to show people there is a future. You can be different. The way you think you are now, the way, you believe you are, what happened to you, yes, it happened. We're not going to deny that. And, yes, it did bad things. And I guess one of the best ways I look at it is if you broke your arm, however you broke your arm, you had a bad thing happen to your arm. It hurt. It wasn't what you wanted. It gets a cast on it, and then it takes time to heal. And usually, most of the time, after you take your cast off, and I've never had a broken bone, the arm might have shrunk some of the muscle. It's weak, and it has to work out to get strong again. And so what's sad is our bones heal, but it doesn't seem like our mind, our feelings, our beliefs can get the same type of healing. So what I wanted to talk about is how that some people who have been sexually abused, not all of them, they tend to live in the past. And somebody who is going through it, who just came out of it, they need to see a future. That what they missed or what they couldn't do because of the abuse or something, but there is a future. And our job, we'll say, as advocates or helping people, is to show them there is a future. There's something different out there for them. Might take some work to get there. Like with, you say, a broken arm, you have to re-exercise it, maybe add more protein to your diet, maybe do some arm exercises to strengthen the muscles after it's been broken. And so that's what I wanted to bring up about. Some people live in the past. They're blinded by it. That's all they can see. And they can't see a future for themselves in any other way. So that was what I was going to talk about. But if you guys want to talk about something else, that's fine too. If you want to ask questions about anything, that's also fine. So I'll turn it back to you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I think that's a very wonderful topic. I think it's very important also. And I would like to comment on that topic. But before I do, I want to give the phone number again to anybody who wants to call in and address this idea. of there is a future and how we need as advocates to let people know that. The phone number is 646-595-2118. Okay. And I wanted to address the idea of there is a future. I spent many years in an organization in which people who had survived childhood sexual abuse spoke with each other confidentially. And I remember clearly hearing someone talk, someone who had already come a long way in recovery and was feeling much better. And I remember thinking, well, they can't really have been like I am. You know, they can't really have ever been as broken up and downhearted and destroyed as I am, because look at them now. I just didn't believe it. I did not believe it. But now I am that survivor who is doing well. And I like to be an example to other people that, yeah, you really can get through it and you can fight your way into a happier life. You really, really can. And that's what I'm going to say right now about that. And I'm going to ask Darlene if she would like to participate in this discussion. Darlene?
Hi, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. Okay. One thing I want to comment about that is back when I first started the memories of the things happening, it seemed like it was too much because it seemed like so much information was trying to race through my brain. And so I really did not see a future. I really thought that it was darkness, and I was thinking, why am I still alive when all there is evil, darkness, despair, hate, all this other kind of bad stuff. Even though I was a Christian, I was already given up because it seemed like no matter who I told or trusted, like even my spouse, but the police wouldn't do that when my spouse beat me when I was remembering some of this stuff, and the church said it's best to let him kill me. So I was really in despair and giving up because it seemed like no matter where I went, you know, I was not getting the support I needed. And at that point, I was still blaming myself for what these perpetrators had done to me. So I was kind of like in a stigma point until I really finally our church started taking psychological so that I could go get psychological help. And it really helped me immensely when that happened, being able to go do that. And it took me a long time to be able to start putting the blame where it needed to be. And I think that once I started, one of the very first psychiatrists I saw had told me, I said, what's wrong with me? He said, what's not wrong with you? Well, everything has been done to you. And I'd be like, yeah, right. That made me feel worse, but it made me feel better in some ways, you know. But he says that he believed my story. And I says, why do you believe what I'm telling you? He says, because you answer back right away. I can tell you're not lying. And that's what started my healing journey on the other, you know, being turned over to from the negative to the positive. Because I was finally believed by somebody. And that's what started it. And started where I was starting to see a shimmer of a light, you know what I mean? That I can get through it possibly. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's interesting,
but I was getting unstuck because of that happening, so I was glad about that.
What's very interesting is most survivors, if they do go to a faith-based people, they usually end up with the pastor. He's a man. He hasn't been taught any of this, and he ain't going to talk about sex. That's a sort of a taboo subject. And he has no training, you know, in any of this. They don't get taught this, how to deal with sexual abuse survivors, how to deal with memory problems, how to deal with this. in the faith-based ministry. The pastor doesn't, the pastor's wife, the youth pastor, the children's pastors. About all they get is maybe some quick 3-hour thing. If they suspect it, they are to call the 1-800 abuse line and report it. And then they're done with it. Now, in the state of Florida, years and years ago, the psychologist wanted to protect the word counseling. So they went into state law and they said, if you're not a licensed counselor, social worker, psychologist, you cannot counsel people. So, Mr. Pastor, you didn't get trained in any of this. This is a mental health issue. All these memories, sexual abuse, it's a crime. You're dealing with thoughts and feelings and maybe disorders and mental health disorders and all kinds of stuff. You're not trained. And don't you dare counsel. You are to automatically refer them to a licensed counselor. You can refer them to a Christian counselor, and most of them are not pastors. They're just somebody that may be taught, and they become the priest and stuff. So there's not a lot of training at, we'll call it the bachelor's level in social work. I remember when I took graduate classes, we're going to learn about the antisocial personality, and we're going to learn about chemicals, and we're going to learn about biological changes, and we're going to learn about anxiety, and we're going to learn what chemicals go off, oh, and what medication you're to take. So then what they would say to a survivor is, you got some stinking thinking. We got to do that with counseling. But if you'll notice now, so many things have changed. There's so much perversion. A man's not a man anymore. A man can be a woman. Okay? A woman can have the lower parts. But I'm a woman. A man can have a womb. Okay? So a lot of things have changed out there for the survivors. Because you don't know who their personal experiences of your therapist. And you definitely, what are you going to do to your pastor? There's a lot of authority. And a lot of them, this one great book I read years ago called Why Christians Can't Trust Psychology. Some lady was sitting in a church, and this pastor was preaching that Christ Jesus will help you with anything. She believed him. She made an appointment with the pastor and said, look, I'm schizophrenic. I've been in the psychiatric hospital. I got some issues. And you said Jesus would help me. He said, honey, I am not qualified. But you said he would, and you could, and you're his representative. He goes, I'm not qualified. Well, that didn't look good for them, for the faith-based communities. So he went to a friend of his in the book, who was a psychologist, and said, you're right, buddy. You ain't trained. You can't help these people. And let's go talk to our friend, the psychiatrist. And he said, oh, neither one of you guys are qualified to work with these people. Only I am. The medical doctor, because this is a medical disease. And so there's a major pecking order and stuff in the helping professions. And sex is such a taboo subject. People, they want to talk about it. And it's a private matter. And it holds secrets. So if some bad things happen to you, you don't know where to go. You can't go to your parents. They won't believe because they don't talk about it. And the police just, a lot of them, they were doing bad stuff themselves. So the child gets trapped in a system where nobody talks. And yet there's a lot going on inside the feelings and the body, the chemicals and the things like that that they don't understand. And so when they get older and if they start seeking treatment or healing, a lot of your therapists are not trained. They can't show you. They're there just to pretty much get paid by the insurance companies. That's all. And if you go to a faith-based one, they don't have a lot of training. They'll refer it to you to a residential program where they have certified sex therapists, and they're going to talk to you, and they're going to get into the gritty details of how sex works and all that. And remember now, pedophilia, it's not called that anymore. It's called minor attraction. Okay? Homosexuality, Lamba, I don't know if you guys have studied Lamba, where boys, men love little boys, and they're going to show their love. That's not a disease. It's not a mental health problem. It's, well, this is, we're showing them we love them. In some cases of sexual abuse, they're getting you ready for the parlors, for the sex ranches, for the strip clubs. They're grooming you. They're getting you ready for the street, to be a streetwalker. Getting you ready. It's sort of like you an unprotected little thing, and we're getting you ready through training and education to work in that business out there. Make some money for some people. And so as when it happens and you get further on in your healing and you become an advocate and you want to help people, you have to look at, well, who am I going to help? Those that have been abused? What about the mama who kind of knew about it and didn't do anything? Do you think she needs help? What about the abuser? Does he need help or her need help? Because women do abusing also. Remember the movie Sybil? Mama was doing all the abusing to that little girl. Not the dad. Mama was. And the whole town knew about it, and nobody did anything. So you have to learn that everybody's issues, everybody needs to see a future, have hope that, okay, something bad happened to you, broke your arm, you got sexually abused. But life is not over. And if you noticed, you ladies have all survived. Did you ever wonder how? Did you ever realize you survived? You didn't die of a heart attack? You didn't go so mentally crazy that you had to go and were locked up on pills and medication? You're here. Now you can reach back and say, there's a future. Okay, bad things happen to you. Okay, it just does. There's very few of us that get through life without something bad happening to us. But you're here now, and you can be a shining bright light for that there's a future. So that's what I wanted to bring about, how we can do that more.
All right, how we can be the bright shining light and show people that there is a future after mm-hmm. child abuse. Thank you.
And you can,
I'm going to repeat. Oh, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. Do the number. Do the phone number.
Okay, the phone number for guests to call us and be part of this conversation is 646-595-2118. Please do call in. And Pastor Deborah, you were saying?
I forgot my thought there. What happens is, advocates, training to be an advocate, you have to know what to say, whether you're on the phone to somebody, in person. I think you're going to a human trafficking marathon or something, or what, I don't know exactly what it is. You have to know that people are listening, and you have to be able to learn how to talk, to say, don't be blinded by the past. Even though something bad happened to you, okay? Some girls, you know, they get date raped in college. They get under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and they're passed around. We had that case, what was it, with that gymnast, that doctor for the U.S. Olympic girls? They were getting sexually abused by a doctor, okay? It happens, but you have to be able to show them life can go on. And one of the best movies to see that is The Three Faces of Eve. True story. And how this girl, you know, she was traumatized by kissing her dead grandmother at 3 or 4. Now, that's not sexual abuse, but it's traumatizing. And she ended up forming a personality called Eve Black. one that was wild and crazy. When Eve White would get under stress, who was different, so she had different personalities. But once she got with a psychiatrist who loved her and believed in healing, she gave up her daughter. She stayed near the psychiatrist. She got divorced from her husband. And she found a man that said, I love you no matter what happened to you. We'll get through this. And Jane started coming up. And a new personality got formed that was probably who she was supposed to be. Another great movie to watch is one with Sean Connery and Tippi Hepburn, I think, called Marley. And it was about how a young little girl was sexually abused. Her mother was a prostitute. And she got married, but she couldn't consummate the sexual act. She couldn't do it. And she didn't know why. And her husband, who was Sean Connery, did know, and they went back and confronted her mother. And that's what broke the whatever it was blocking Marley from committing in the marriage to Sean Connery. There's a lot of true stories out there, a lot of wonderful healing stories about people who have issues in life. And you hear a lot of it, you know, and how they came out of it. A lot of them found Christ, got in a good community, got a good loving partner, stayed in therapy. Some got into physical exercises. Some got into different forms of therapy. And they came out the other side. And I don't know if it's due to the laws of the state, you know, or the criminal justice system. Because even though if you, you know, your perpetrator gets arrested and they go to jail, that doesn't heal the issues that's going on the inside of a person. You might have a little bit of satisfaction with it, but it doesn't heal all the hurts and the wounds and the fears and the triggers, because he's locked up, and the main parents will believe you. So advocacy, and when you are seeking help, or, you know, say whatever time that is, a lot of people don't know how to talk to you and give you a hope and a future. And like if you go to foster care, the foster care parents will say, we love you so much, but the judicial system, their goal is to reunite the child with the parents or a cousin or an aunt, a family member, because they believe that is the best thing for the child. So they go over to foster care. The foster parents have no training. They're not therapists. They're just kind of keeping you out of a group home. And maybe the perpetrator's showing up, or a mother who got beat or something. And there's no therapy. And it just, and then, you know, the court system decide you either go up for adoption, which is very rare, or you go to an aunt in another state. Okay, and it's, their hands are washed of you. And you always wonder why so many of these people are committing horrible acts. A lot of times you'll hear, hey, the perpetrator started hurting animals, lighting fires. Parents just weren't there. And the signs, we see them in these school shooters. The signs were there, and nobody did anything. No counseling. Parents don't want to talk about it. So you have to recognize that there's a lot against you in healing, but if somebody really wants it and they want to be healed and they don't want to, you know, get triggered and have all these memories come back, then that's the first step to show them a future. So I'll let you speak to that some, Annie, if you want to.
Thank you, Pastor Deborah. Wow, I wish that I had training on how to talk to survivors. I never had that kind of training. I probably know a lot about how to do it just based on my experience. But it would be cool if NASCA would have like a class so that everybody could learn how to talk to survivors. That'd be cool.
Well, I think what NASCA does is how they're sort of organized. From what I see, it's sort of a peer-to-peer support group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a peer talking to someone else that's about our level that had it go through, and we're just there to support you. And to encourage you, you know, yes, we're just one part of your healing. You know, go get some professional help or whatever you want. And so NASCA's more set up, you know, like peer-to-peer. I've been sexually abused, and I can sit and I know what you're telling me, and I believe you. But mm-hmm. having people, believe you can be for some people the first step. But then you've got a lot more steps to take. And a lot of times, you know, like I said, back, I don't know, yeah, you guys were probably very young back then. Back in the 80s, there was a lot of sexual abuse cases coming out. And they were going to therapists. And the therapist, and I wasn't in the system of mental health counseling at the time. The therapists were either bringing memories through hypnosis or through whatever they did, and the patient was remembering that it was their parents, their father, say, who sexually abused them, or their brother. And so the therapist, who probably had very little training in this, because you can get licensed and then take a 30-hour or 40-hour hypnosis class, and now you're qualified to hypnotize people. So the therapist must have been recommending to the clients to go sue your parents, okay, for the abuse that's causing you problems now as an adult. And so that started happening, and the parents said, many of them rose up and they formed the false memory syndrome group, saying that, honey, therapist, you don't know what happened. We know our daughter or son. They're lying. We didn't do it, and we're going to sue you. You must have put those thoughts, those beliefs into our daughter or son, because we didn't do this, and we're taking you to court. Okay? We're going to sue you, therapist. And so the therapist backed off. Okay? And it was a powerful, powerful time where the parents will say, like if it was your father or brother or uncle, they rose up and they got lawyers. They were pushing back against what the client will say, the abused one, was saying. And so the mental health world sort of, we backing away from that topic. We aren't recommending you go sue, you know, and you confront your parents on what they did and stuff like that. They just backed away from it. So I think a lot of your peer-to-peer support groups came up. Now, Bill, as you know, he got training in 12 steps, which is a support group, which is Christ-based, and it's men. And he said that really helped him because he had a mentor, somebody that was further along the path of healing. I think he said he got into drugs and alcohol, I'm not quite sure. And so a lot of people get into peer-to-peer support groups. Can it help? Sure. But if your peer is not way on down the road, like a lot of you ladies, you know, that are the people out here on NASCA, then they get re-traumatized and the person you're trying to help can't see the future because your life doesn't show it. You're still having issues. You're still in the support groups, you know. You're not advocating. And one of the things that everybody, even what I like about, say, if you get cancer, if you go to the MD Anderson Cancer Treatment Facility, you got 10,000 people helping you. Everybody is positive, motivated. They're encouraging, we're going to lick this, we're going to heal this. We got a bell that we're going to ring when you're a year out. We are on your team, okay, the medical community. And they are pushing you with encouragement, and they aren't quitting, and they are give you every kind of support system that you need, whether it's a social worker or a grief work, or you need somebody just to talk to on the phone. The doctors are positive. You don't get that in mental health counseling. You get one doctor, one psychiatrist, one psychologist, one social worker, and that's it. It's not a team approach. And so you don't get that powerful encouragement. And I like that. They show it, you know, they're fighters, the cancer people. They're fighters for you. They've got beliefs. You know, okay, you got to have chemotherapy. You lose your hair. We'll get you a wig. Okay, you got to come in and do that. We got to. That's okay. We're with you. We're not leaving you. We're here. You know, we're educated people. We've got the knowledge of all the chemistry. We know what cancer is, and the cancer patient feels safe. That there's hope. There's healing. I got a team behind me, and when I can't do it. You know, there's somebody there that'll pick me up. There's cancer support groups. People will come in my home and help me. All because I got cancer, a life-threatening disease. But when you're trying to get healed from sexual abuse, you get one person in your life, the therapist, that you see, what, every 2 weeks or 52 minutes? You go to a church, maybe. And you have very little contact, no counseling, because they can't legally do it. You have untrained women's ministries, untrained pastors. You know, you don't want to talk. You don't want to embarrass yourself with your friends. You go to work. You don't want to talk about it. You got one person, your therapist. And it's so different when you have a whole team pulling for you. I just see the commercials on TV and, you know, hey, I'd rather go to that cancer place than another one because their doctors, their nurses, they are positive. They're fighters. And I don't see that so much in mental health counseling or the faith-based community, that we got your back. We're going to be with you for the rest of your life, no matter how long it takes. I ain't going anywhere. You don't have any insurance? No problem. I'll see you. You call me 24/7 if you need it, even if it's 20 years down the road. I don't see that. Does that make sense? So advocacy and mm-hmm. helping people to see a future is you do it through your words, you do it through your actions, and since sexual abuse is such a private, for a child it's usually very private, and it's a secret. It's hard to, you know, children want to obey, and they, you know, don't want to displease the adults, so they don't tell. And so the person who's been abused stays in an isolated recovery time. And I think that's why the support groups like NASCA are important, because people start talking. But then what happens is everybody goes, that's wonderful. You're telling your story. Okay, but now what? Now what? Where do I go from here? Okay, what does NASCA do next? I've told my story. Do I write a book? Who do I go see? You know, who's going to follow me for 20, 30 years in my recovery? You know, who can I call? Is there a future for me, you know, out there? And when troubled times come, you know, is there special hotlines that I can call besides NASCA or is there something? So being able through your voice and your words to show a future to people is very important. Okay? So I'll let you respond, Annie, or anybody else if they want to.
Thanks, Pastor Deborah. I will ask Darlene if she would like to respond to anything or ask any questions. Darlene?
Yes, recently, since I had dissociative identity disorder, I went back and started watching some of those movies again. I watched Sybil and I watched The Three Faces of Eve, and I still could not find it, certain things that I was looking for that I related to, right? So I started watching the one with Trudy Chase, when the rabbit howls.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing, and when I went back and was watching that, you know, where they put the little girl down the well, that's the thing,
yes,
that I was looking for, because I remember that happening to me, but I didn't have the snake coming down at me, but I was told that
okay,
there's going to be snakes all at the side and everything. You know what I mean?
Do you know?
So,
okay. I'll tell you the purpose for that. The purpose for that event, going down a well, is to force you to disassociate, okay, into multiple parts, okay, so they can use you. Okay, and you either survive it by forming parts or you die. And what they're doing is, it's done in the occult all the time, it's so that they can then program your parts to do certain things. And that is done. I've worked with people like that. Sometimes it's a well, sometimes it's a grave with snakes. It's you put in dark places, and they do it purposely. They want to create. They want you to split, okay? And they're testing to see if you will survive or die. If you survive, they know you've created a part that will survive in that. Then what they do, if they to continue further abuse, okay, they
thank
know
you so
that
much.
You ain't going to, huh?
So thank you for
it
answering
is,
this.
Okay. It is a purposeful abuse, okay, to do certain things. Because what happens is they're looking, what they call for the people that are doing it, they're looking to see if you have the gift. Okay. And what that means is,
They already had me early in life. From 4-year-old, they already had me switching personalities for the child pornography stuff and stuff. So
yes,
they already had me trained.
Yes, ma'am.
I think it
was basically
to keep me scared to be under their whim, whatever they say, whatever they do, you know, me not to have my own dark ideas, feelings, or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. And what happens is when you, a lot of family members, whether you know it or not, they work for business people. They have to produce children for child pornography, and they have to split the children. And so it is money-making. It is evil. A lot of people don't realize a lot of families make a lot of money by selling their children, abusing their children, getting them ready for the system. We got to have them in the pimps. Need them on the streets. They need them in child pornography. They need them in adult porn. They need them to be call girls. And so
I was the only one, though, in the whole entire, out of 13 kids and all, about 13 kids and all, I was the only one that they had in the child pornography stuff.
Okay, usually what happens in that case is the family, the parents, the father will make a deal with whoever's over him. Okay, we're going to have one. Okay, you're going to give us one. If you want to live, if you don't want us to kill all your kids, you give us one. You have to sacrifice one, and you were the sacrifice. That's Now, what did they have? You know, that's typical. Okay, that is very typical. The parents will, you can see that early on in the Bible with Ruth. There was a famine, and the parents had too many kids. They sold her to the priest of Moloch to be raised up to be sacrificed. Kids have been sold for especially girls, okay, because they, all right, because girls can produce other children, and girls are used for what we call lust, sex, on men, but typically when you're one, you go, why me, okay? The dad probably had to choose one. He had too many kids, and he probably sold you to them, and he got some money, and they did. Yes?
What they did was my case, if I could tell you.
Mm-hmm.
What they did with my case is my dad came from Germany when he was in the military. He had met my mom, and a sibling told me that he had a book on how to have sex with kids. So he started selling me from age two for other things, and they started pressing me,
mm-hmm.
things. But it was because they considered me cute. These guys considered me cute. So my family said, oh, I can make a fast buck with that.
Yes. And so what you do is you look at it, it's money. It's children are used to make money. Children, and they know, and, you know, the CIA has been involved in a lot of this. Mind control, mind programming. They used to do LSD, all kinds of things. But men, children have been in brothels. They have been the children of Caesars. They have been abused because they're cute. They're innocent. They'll do whatever you want. And
we got another caller in here, too. I wanted to say Dr. Nancy Brown's in here with us as well.
Okay. So what happens is you were the one that they wanted. Your dad sold them for whatever, probably made money, got some, maybe he had, a lot of times, you know, they got some issues. And they say, we won't prosecute, turn you in, we'll pay off your debts, you know, you got some stuff, if you'll give us one of your kids. And so and you got picked, and they put you down the well, and they know, the ones that do that, they know how to split a child's personality. They know how to do that in the soul. The spirit does the work because it has the power you create to survive. And once that happens, when you get pulled up, they know what to do. They've been trained how to program that part. And then they'll threaten you. You don't want to go back in the well again, do you? No. Okay, then you do whatever. And you'll split and into that personality to whatever they want. And it's purposely done. And it's not anything that's not. It's not. It's something that is known when you study child abuse, MK Ultra. You study the occult. You study mind control, splitting. You study all of that. Now, that's not taught for mental health counseling. A psychologist will know. A psychiatrist will know about, they call it multiple personalities. They know about that if they got training. And now it's called dissociative identity disorder.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But your basic master's level counselor does not get any of that. Very few psychologists study that. Okay? They know it's there.
That's why they give us the wrong diagnosis and try to say schizophrenic or bipolar or something like that when you actually had DID. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it depends on what school, where you go to get your training. Remember, every school is based on a particular, back when I was going through in the 70s, maybe you were a behavioralist. You would study B.F. Skinner, okay? And he believed human beings were nothing more than animal. And you could train them, you know, like you do a monkey or a dog with little pain or pleasure, little treats. and we were just animals to be trained. That was B.F. Skinner. Some people believe that, and they follow that. And in all their training of childhood and teenagers, pain or, you know, pleasure. And there was others, Carl Rogers, no, you're more of a thinking. You can figure this out. So some master's level schools, they have a certain viewpoint, and, you know, some of their stuff, DID is more at the psychiatry level and psychology level. And they kind of know what causes it. They do say it is a defense mechanism for your mind. So when you're under great stress and pressure and fear, you don't die of a heart attack. And your body is able to do it, your soul's able to do it, and your spirit's able to do it. And you will lose your memories because you won't remember anything but the fear. And there's been so many tests with CIA, government and stuff. If you look at the Manchurian Candidate movie with Frank Sinatra, trauma, abuse, drugs, you create people that get triggered. And the story was this lady who was a politician wanted an assassin. And all she had to do is show the Queen of Diamonds and then give an order to her son. And he got programmed, beaten, and abused. I think it was in China or North Korea. And the most of the time he was a fun-loving person and had a job. But as soon as that queen, he played solitaire and the queen came up, that was his trigger. And the next words that came out of your mouth, he just followed them. Then he had no memory of what he did. And they tried to do that with, there was another great movie called Men Stare at Goats. They were trying to get men to do LSD, and they did a lot of that in the early years. They tried to make new kinds of soldiers, and then you study that movie. Then there's another one called Remote Viewing. During the Vietnam War, they would put some guys in rooms, and they'd leave their body spiritually. They'd travel to Vietnam, and they would get information, come back, and draw a picture. And that was all done in the military. So this was, and a lot of that came out of Hitler's Germany, a lot of research that was done. And so a lot of people know how to abuse a child, okay, and they have training, and the child not remember it, block off the memories, close the doors. You know, how do you think all these children in child pornography, in the movies, the girls that go and the boys that go to the strip joints, they just slip into that personality. And they come out and, you know, they don't know what to do, okay? That's just, it's not taught to the pastors. It's not talked about in life coaching. It's not talked about in peer support. What do you do with a person who disassociates? Okay? How do you heal them? But if you're not even trained in that and you don't know that's going on with children, you know, from child abuse, then they never, I think another word in the mental health counseling, it would be called an inner child needs to be healed. And
right.
Okay, there's some good books out there about that. And they would say, you've got one in there and we got to talk to them. And we got to get some healing, you know, to the inner child. I think John Bradshaw, I had to study all of this when I was thrown into this. And I had to understand how a person disassociates and why does that happen. And people lose time and they don't have the memories of what happened. And when the memories start coming back, okay, they're not pretty if you don't know what to do with the memories. And
it's still scary to me whenever, like, I try to remember coming back out of that well, and it seems like there's a lot of pressure, and something stops it from telling me what happened coming, you know, with them bringing me back up. You know, it just stops right there because my head hurts so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
there's a lot
really
that
I don't really know what happened when I got back out of the well, you know.
Well, what happens is when you get there's a biological thing going on with all kinds of hormones, chemicals, adrenaline, cortisol, everything is okay. Fear is there, and that produces a lot of that. The soul part of it, there's something in the Bible, and it says, as you think in your heart, so you are. You can create. We all have it. I try to tell people. Some of us, when we go to work, we have a personality that we have at work with our coworkers. If you're a mother and you have children, you have a personality that works with your children. If you are going to go to the bedroom with your husband or you're going to be, you have a personality. We're all capable of being many, but we're one. And I asked God years ago, how come there's all these people with multiple personalities? He said, because I am a multiple. I can be whatever I need to be for whatever situation. And that's what, and he said, I gave that gift to all humanity. So a child gets put in a well, has the gift in their spirit to create whatever they need to create to stay alive. Some form have a best friend that they talk to. Others become something else, some excellent true story. And I had to read about, I had to go into the wells sort of by reading and studying. I had to understand it. This was not taught in mental health counseling. But God has a way of going in there and healing those personalities. He basically takes them away. And he heals whatever was there by taking it away. And you just go, if you have a memory, you don't really have it. And so, but that's not taught in mental health counseling. It's, there's not a lot of discussion in group therapy about it. Or, and, you know, you can form a personality to be in the group therapy. And, you know, kids are so resilient. They'll go, I'll be whatever I need to be. I'm going to survive. If I need to be this, I'll survive with that. If I need to be that, I'll survive. If I need to be this and act that way, I'll survive. To survive, I'll do that. And that is, and so we have to be able to talk to people and say, yes, that happened. It is a gift. You're here. There's hope for a future. And I had to have belief that God would help people deal with this. And I saw it happen in my home. I worked with people from hardcore multi-generational Satanism, and I took them in my home, and I saw the programs, the parts, pop in, pop out, all kinds of stuff, all sorts of ways. And I go, oh, my goodness. You know, I had to have a personal experience with it, and then I had to talk to God about how to heal them. And he showed me how to do it. It was through deliverance work and prayer. And
you might if we take a break and we'll go to Annie and see if she got anything to say.
Yeah.
And maybe the other two callers.
Yeah.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you so much for all of the information you've given us. And I wanted to tell everyone that Carol Levine is on the line now, and I would ask Nancy, Dr. Nancy Brown, would you like to comment?
Hi, good evening, everyone. Definitely a lot of what was said by Pastor Deborah I was able to relate with right now when it comes to mental health. People are quick to not look at the spiritual side of things. I was actually enjoying listening in for right now because the conversation had a couple of different topics and I came in a little late, but I was definitely able to relate and to and I agreed with a lot of what was said. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Carol, would you like to speak?
Well, I just called in now. I was sleeping. I got a sleep dump time. But anyway, what I was hearing was that you turn many times to God for you know, for instructions and answers and so forth, so you can deal, you know, effectively with people. I think there's a lot of times people do that, you know, and even just for their own lives, you know, either you believe in God or you don't, you know. And I came from an atheist family, so I was always a weirdo anyway, okay. And I never blamed God for anything that happened, because we have our own way of thinking. God gave us that right, okay. So that's how we differ from the animals. Now, it's very true that many times I've turned to prayer because I've been so upset. You know, you understand that, Pastor. A lot of times with the places mm-hmm. that we come from, we get so upset. And a lot of times that's how people find God, is just by going through that, and it helps them in their life. However, people also have to learn, you know, how to fend for themselves and to deal with things effectively. And that comes through each day living and learning. So it's very hard when you come from backgrounds like we do, but it's not impossible to heal.
That is correct, Ms. Carol.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I always had to do with people was I had to ask them. Or I always did it this way. When I got in the healing profession, whether it was mental health, you know, when you're set up as a therapist and you put your little sign out, anybody that comes to you is pretty much asking for help. They got a mm-hmm. problem. They want counseling. They want education. They want support, something. So I took that and I said, okay, God, I'm going to help you to help people. So I said, I trust you. Anybody you bring in, whether it's a pastor, an unbeliever, doesn't matter, they got some issues. You are bringing them into my life. You're going to have to train me and educate me, okay? But anybody that comes, I don't ask them a lot of questions, because God trained me in dissociative identity, multiple personalities, the occult, witchcraft, spiritual stuff, all kinds of things that was not in mental health counseling. So I knew anybody that came into my area or my phone or I met in Walmart or something, I was to help them. A lot of times I never said a word to them. I just looked at him, and God gave me a word of knowledge or something. I do a prayer, a petition to God. He knew what was wrong. He knew their lives. I didn't have to know it. I say, okay, God, you're just bringing them to my attention. You're bringing them. They're here in the vegetable section. Okay. And he said, look at that one. I want to help. Okay. I don't know what was wrong with most of them or how deep it was, but God did, and I trusted him with them. But he needed somebody, we would call it in Christianity, I had to be a priest. I had to be the royal petitioner. I had to go to God quietly, I didn't say anything, for God then to have permission to do the work. So I built that partnership, and I just learned, hey, Walmart was a great place to go. Hey, you talk to people in line while you're there. I watch a movie, you know, and I'll tell somebody, I'm so, oh, yeah, I ran into a Jewish guy. Oh, did you see this? Oh, yeah, go watch that movie. I would carry books. I would give books away. Now, some of the books I read, I didn't give away. They're very in deep detail, which I had to read. I had to be able to hear and see the gross stuff that most therapists don't see and hear. I had to know what happened to children. I had to see it, you know, through movies, true life books, all kinds of things. And so what happened was I saw that God was wanting to heal them. These people would be drawn to you, like to NASCA, okay, even if they just listen or don't listen or they come to the they're wanting help. They're wanting somebody to, you know, they want something on the website that says there's hope. There's a future. You don't have to stay like this. Yeah, bad things happened. But there is hope for you. Okay? And look, read this article. You know, call Carol late at night. Listen on the blog talk radio. Watch this video of Bill. There's hope. okay? Bad things happened, you know, years ago as a child. But there is hope. We're here. And a lot of people, they don't hear that much from therapists or psychologists. You get referred there. Maybe you go to the emergency room. Okay, you get referred to a psychiatrist, tried to kill yourself. Okay. But you never get that kind of love that has to be there with a lot of deep understanding and knowledge. And Carol does great because she talks to them late at night. And that's when a lot of people need that support. And I used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And but they need videos. They need books they can read, movies they can watch to go, oh, well, I'm not alone. Look what happened to Sybil. Oh, my gosh, look what happened to Three Faces of Eve. I'm not alone. These are true stories, okay? And I used to read true stories. Like, I used to read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf. I read about the lady that did Gone with the Wind. She went had mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Patty Duke Austin tried to commit suicide. She had it. I would read true stories about movie stars to say, oh, I was learning. And then God and I partnered as a pastor now. So we go, okay, anybody you bring into my life, I'm to educate them. They need prayer. Maybe I just see them on television, on the news, and God says, pray for them. Okay, I know what. There's something there. I don't have to do any. God knows. So I was always on the lookout for that. But even when I talked to them, I brought them in my home. I had to give them hope. But it was hard because there are multiple personalities. One day they're a queen. The next day, next minute they're a prostitute. One minute they're trying to kill me. The next minute they want to love me. They switch their personalities all the time, going around, round and round. I had this one girl living with me named Andrea. She was seeing a psychologist. She had issues. She was born in this multi-generational stuff. She was on all kinds of medication. And he told her, we can get everything integrated. That means all your personalities all become mm-hmm. one and everybody remembers everything. You're not split anymore. Okay, and it'll take about 6 or 7 years. And God said, I want to show them. My way will not take 6 or 7 years. But we were at my kitchen table, her and her friend were both multiple person and a Christian brother. And the parts started coming up in her, and a little boy would come up and stick his tongue out. I said, would you like to go play with Jesus and just go off and be a little, oh, yeah. I prayed and he was gone. That part was gone. Then I had three girls come up right inside of, right there, and they're all crying. You took our brother away. You killed him. You killed him. I'm like, no, I didn't. He went off with Jesus. Well, don't you want to go? Yes, but we can't leave Carrie. I go, who's Carrie? Am I? This is one girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, that's our little, our sister right over there on that slab. She can't hear. She can't see. She can't walk. We can't leave her. And she can't get up. I go, oh, God, what? I go, God, your word said, you came to set the captive free, to heal the blind, to set the lame to walk and the deaf to hear. Father, in the name of Jesus Christ, get Carrie up. She got up off the slab. This is all in the spirit realm. And this big demonic spirit way off and goes, you can't have her. She's mine. Because what he did, took this girl named Andrew when she was a small child, disassociated her, and so when he wanted her to lay down and do whatever he wanted to do or another human, she'd lay there deaf, dumb, and blind. And the little girls and the little boys would all protect her, and they wouldn't leave. So all of them left and went with Jesus by prayer. The next day she gets up and says, Pastor Deborah, for the first time in my life, I feel like I can run and be free. I'm going to run down the street. I said, you go and enjoy it. Just that one little area. One prayer took 1, 2, 3, 4 parts out. Gone. Connection to that demon, gone. And she had a little freedom in her life. She felt she could run. Before, she couldn't escape. She couldn't run, couldn't go on it because Carrie was stuck. And so I go, okay, that was not taught in mental health counseling. But I had to learn how to go the way God was going to give people hope. So NASCA's real good. I know Bill's real good about saying, you know, whatever works for other people, other ways of freedom, just mm-hmm. by the faith-based and spirituality. And, you know, believe it or not, in Islam, they believe in these things. They just call them jinns. Catholic Church believes that you can have some issues. And if it's not biological or mental health, they do the casting out of devils. They are called exorcists. At least they believe it. But most faith-based groups don't. There is that part of it. And there's the soul part. That's all divided up. But like as I said, most therapists, social workers, it's not taught at the master's level.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
very
let me stop you there for a second. Hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to get this a little bit in a circle here that we can look at it. A lot of the psychologists and social workers and therapists and psychiatrists, all of which I've worked with, they haven't walked in our shoes. That's number one.
That's
so
great.
They're not going to have the same understanding as we, the people who have, you know, walked in those shoes. And so they don't know really completely how to, they have book learning and that's it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
They don't have the experience that we have. I've been in newspapers. I've written my book, made it to Japan, blew my mind. That was good enough for me. Universities, churches. I did get into a couple of churches. Yes, I did. And that was really exciting for me to get into the churches. But the point is this. I, too, at one time was part of that prayer group. Now, I've mentioned that on air I don't know how many times.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know.
And, yep. And they did do exorcisms. Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't believe it, okay. But we had a huge ceremony to go to down by the shore, New Jersey shore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went with them. And there was this one girl who... I don't know, the prayer group said she was full of demons. So I thought, well, all right, I'm going to go into this prayer group, and I'm going to watch and see what goes on. And there was a priest there, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do an exorcism over a person, you're not supposed to touch them because the evil spirits then can enter your body. This is what I was told.
That's correct. If you have open doors, that is correct.
Right. So, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I looked at the chair she was sitting on because I'm a skeptical person, okay? That's just the way I am. And there weren't any ropes. There weren't any things that would bounce her off or anything. It was just a regular chair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I prayed, too, with them. And this girl, as Christ is my witness, went flying through the air in the middle of prayers, bounced off the wall,
mm-hmm.
And she got up. She managed to get up. She did bruise her head a little bit. She was going to have a nice lump on her head because she bounced off of a hard wall. And
mm-hmm.
They put her in a van, and they took her home. Now, the rest
mm-hmm.
of us were down there, and we would be there for a couple of days, so it didn't matter if they took her home. So, you see, I do believe that people have demons. I do, because of what I saw. I can tell this to all the people listening to NASCA right now. They're going to have a ton of questions. They're going to think, oh, that's Carol beat her silly self or whatever, whatever, because I love to clown around. We all know this. I love to get a little humor in. But on the other hand, I know what I saw, okay? And I checked the chair out. So that happened. But you see, there's so many people, that they have a place for God, they have a place for life, they have a place for this, they have a place for that. They put everything in different categories. And maybe they don't feel, you know, the love of God because they kind of like put up blocks. People have questions in their minds. Well, if God was real, because many people have asked me this, and I'm sure to anyone who believes in God, if God was real, then why did this happen to that person? Why did it happen to me? Why did it happen? All these things. You see, there's all these roadblocks. Yes, we're
putting
very
bad. It's not really. It's not. It's not really
well,
a
let
robot.
Me finish.
It's a,
it, it,
oh,
what it does,
ahead.
Though, hold on, Pastor, because what it does is it blocks people from even allowing for God to go into them in a way, okay? But
mm-hmm.
what you're talking about, I understand, but there's a lot of people out there that are not going to understand it, unfortunately. They're not going to understand unless they have experiences. I've had more experiences than that. I'm going to write another book. I'll put my experiences in. And I'll also write one about spooks because I've seen them. I had a haunted house that I lived in, and the whole town knew it, too. But anyway, the point is, yes, there's spirits, there's evil, there's good, there's wholesome, there's unwholesome, there's all kinds of things in this world that we're living in, and this is what's bringing our – there's greed, and this is what's bringing our – and power. This is what's bringing our country down. And also, too, not only our country, but our people and the spirit of the people. There's so many calls I'm getting where people are so horribly depressed. Well, why wouldn't they be? I have the news right on now. It's on mute. I watch the news all the time. And let me tell you something. I don't know if we're going to make it through this. Okay. Now, I'm not trying to scare people. But we're in a heap of trouble in our country. And we have to look at what people are dealing with, okay, what they're dealing with. They're dealing with hunger. They're dealing with immigrants coming over, okay, across the line that don't belong here. I believe in immigrants coming over who want a better life. I have no problems with them. But we've got the cartel. And they're bringing in the children.
Okay.
And the kids are out on the streets. They're being prostituted out. Or the ones that are older, they're putting in other different fields, working in motels for nothing. Yeah, they get fed and they have a room. That's it. And things like that. And then also, too, do you realize that they're taking the organs out of children? They did this years ago. Do you remember?
Oh,
they, were,
yeah,
they would kidnap a kid. They would kidnap a kid.
That's still going on.
Yep. And now it's increased. It's not just a sexual thing. It is also they're selling them. They're selling the organs, and, of course, they're dying, these kids. I mean, they kill them after that, and they have to get the organs to wherever they go so that they're still usable. They have to put them on ice. Isn't that nice? So, you see, we have a world that we're living in where there's so much evil, that we have to look at the whole picture, And I really don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. But with me, I just put all my problems in God's hands, and I figured, okay, you figure it out. And then I go about my business. And I have enough faith that I can believe that it will work out for the best. So what you're teaching here and what you're talking about is very good, but I don't know if too many people quite understand all of that. Because you're talking about, and I know that story, you had spoken about that before, how you took people into your house, and they were all filled with demons and all of this stuff and so forth. That freaks people's minds out if they don't understand it. Okay, that really freaks them out. But the truth of the matter is that evil does walk the earth. It absolutely does. And what we as Christians or people who believe in God have to do is get stronger in our own faith. And yes, we have to fight back. We have to fight back, Pastor. The day may come when we're going to be standing next to each other. I don't care what color you are. I don't care if you're black, white, green, orange, purple. Did I forget a color? Yellow, whatever, red. And take our country back because we're Americans. Now, this is what's going on in our lives. Okay, this is what's going on in our lives. The people don't understand about exorcisms. They don't know if they believe it or not. And so it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to even talk about it because I have spoken about it this way, too, to other people. And they look at me like I'm from Mars. You know? They can't believe that there's so much evil that encompasses a person's spirit where they really belong to the fallen angel, Satan.
Yes. I noticed we got 10 minutes left.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to get across here is, you know, I don't know. I came into the show late because I was sleeping, because I am up all night. That's true. And so I fell asleep. But I do know this. We have a lot of work to do. A lot of work. And it's a time now for people to draw together, and whatever issues you have against each other, whether it be racial or whatever the hell it is, it's not time for that. It's not time ever for that, really. This is 2022. And we have to work together as a people, and we have to get stronger, and somehow we have to get rid of the people who are causing all of this grief. And you know what I'm talking about, which side. Because our country's just going down the tubes. And with that, those people out there who are suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder of any kind, whether it be with the multiple personality disorder, the dual, the dual personality, the dual addictions to alcohol and drugs, all the things that people are suffering from, they're going backwards. Now, this is a real issue. They're going backwards because of the world that we're living in. They're drinking more. They're doing drugs more. We're losing many, many children. Halloween is coming up. I like Halloween. I like it, not because I celebrate it, but I like to see all the costumes because a lot of times they're very creative, and I think it's fun just to see the costumes.
Carol.
Yes.
I kind of think that a lot of the problem with the mental health today is because all they want to do is medicate and instead of trying to resolve what the issue is.
You can't do that. That's something you could have done maybe some years ago.
I know. We're still doing that today.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you what. If this was 4 years ago, say, maybe you could have sat down, or even 3 years ago, that would be a good approach, like when we have our coaches come on. Many times I'm going to be with, what's her name? I know her so well, on Friday. And she's a coach. And they offer yoga. They offer meditation. They offer all kinds of things.
Rachel Grant.
Yes. And I had called her, in fact, and I wanted her on some time ago. And that's a wonderful approach. But right now we're living in a world where I don't know if people can even actually get themselves to the point of really, you know, meditating, because there's always this issue, that issue, this issue. You know. What we have to do now is, you know, people need more than ever to come to groups like NASCA, and where we can, you know, support each other. You have your support groups. And also on our website, NASCA.org, we have the programs. I've sent quite a few people to programs where they get help, and I've gotten a good feedback from that also. Because, you see, people are going backwards in their recovery. It's like a child who all of a sudden gets abused, and usually it would be sexually that would do this, where they start to urinate or get in their panties, and it's like they're not potty trained. They go backwards, and they act babyish. Well, the adults, they're not doing that, I hope, but, you know, but they're going backwards because they're filled with fear and anger and anguish and anxiety, and they don't know what they're going to do tomorrow because maybe today wasn't too good. So, you see, we have all of these things that are going on, Pastor, you know, all these things. And I think it's good, you know, to talk about God, because I know I get my strength from God. I had so many things happen to me in my life, which I haven't even spoken about on the show. But it's the time is ticking. The clock is ticking. And so what we have to do is be there, absolutely, you know, for those people who are going backwards, and for those people who are newbies, I think Darlene brought that one up, newbies, you know, new to the group. Yeah, you did. I could tell. She's laughing. Because we have to reach them somehow. We have to reach them so that they can reach themselves. And if they choose to believe in God, and, you know, I came from an atheist family, like I said, and I was beaten for it. And I met Billy Graham when I was 5 years old in New York City, and he gave me a Bible. I have that Bible to this day. And,
wow.
You know, yeah, it was wonderful. What a wonderful experience. And I stood in the line where everybody was sinners and they wanted to be, you know, blessed. And I went and I ran up in the line, too, and I was 5 years old. I don't know what I did wrong, but, you know, so he was laughing when he saw me. And he blessed me. And he said, Carol, someday you and other people that you know are going to reach many people. Now, I assume he meant NASCAR because he didn't know. I mean, what else could it be, right? I've been on the radio stations, been in the newspaper, wrote a book. All these things that we do to try and help those who, well, you know, who have suffered the horrors of child abuse. And I am noticing on TV now, through the news, since I watch it all day long when I'm up, they do at times mention child abuse. This is a big step. Because years ago, when I joined NASCA, child abuse was never mentioned in the news. So you see, all the things that we do for those who have been abused, all the words we speak, all the shows we have, all the presentations we do, whatever it is that we do, writing the books. I was book number 2 on Amazon. Now you go to Amazon, it is flooded with books on child abuse. So all the preaching that we do, all the places we go and do presentations, all this stuff that we do, you know, is starting to be heard. And I know people do write letters, you know, like to Congress. They write it to their mayor, then it goes on down the line. Well, maybe now it's starting to happen, Pastor, because today, 3 different times, I heard about child abuse on the news. So that's a good thing. I just wanted people to know that finally our voices are being heard. That's good. I want those who abused us to go to jail, stay there. All right? I don't want them out on the streets. The ones that are out on the streets right now, not just the sex offenders, but those who commit crimes, they're the ones that are causing so much trouble. So much trouble.
Carol, we have 2 minutes and 30 seconds left now.
Okay, that's good. So here's the deal. The point is people are listening to us more now. And, you know, I think that's a very good thing. All right, go ahead. You have 2 minutes. Go ahead, Pastor. You want to, you know, close the show down.
Well, I just hope that everybody at NASCA will choose to be a voice for the future, for healing, and to help people see that there is a future and they can get help and they can get healed, and that through the many different aspects of NASCA, whatever they have, that they don't have to continue to suffer, you know, as they are, that there is people that love them and help them. And whatever way they find, you know, there is hope, and they can be better. And that's about all that, you know, I think NASCA does a really good job about that. And so that's my main thing, is that every voice, every time somebody comes on the show, should always be advocating for hope, for a future of healing, showing the way that, you know, healing comes, that they are loved, that, you know, yeah, bad things happened, but they don't have to stay in that stuff. They can come forth and sort of, you know, be new and be healed and then help other people. So, all right, close it out, Annie.
Okay.
50 seconds.
Thank you, Pastor Deborah. Thank you for everything. Thank you to Darlene Clark, Dr. Nancy Brown, and to Carol Levine for all being on the panel tonight. I'm Annie Margis. I was one of your co-hosts tonight, and this is SCAN Radio, episode 3037, and you can get that episode archived at the website NASCA.org, NASCA.org, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Another tomorrow.
that dawn was gone. You are the sky.